All right, my dears, welcome back. I hope, however you spent the time, that it was of benefit. And before, I think there was some, the volume was low. We've done all we can on this, on our end, to turn up the volume. Hopefully the sound is okay. All right. So again, we'll just move into the sit and ask you to close your eyes, drop the gaze. Allow the body to come into a posture that allows you to feel upright and alert, connecting to the earth's energies below us, into the energies of the heavens above and around us. We're taking our place in the family of things, right? Taking our place in this global sangha. Taking our seats as daughters of the Buddha, sitting in circle, I like to think, as women have always done through time. It's a chance to come together. And for the anchor of our sit today, invite us, if this feels helpful, just to stay with the earth element in these bones of ours. So it may be helpful to call to mind an image of the earth element for those of you familiar with the land at Spirok, the hillsides, or local here to the Bay Area, Mount Tam. A grove of trees, rocks, anything, or the sort of iconic Mount Fuji, the mountains that seem to arise just from the horizon. Here in California, our big, or Northern Cal, our big trees are, of course, the redwoods or the California oaks. Just thinking wherever you are, what are the earth elements that come to mind? Again, hillsides, rocks, trees, if that's helpful. Images of mountains that may or may not be geographically close with the mountain. The unperturbableness of the mountain in the face of winds that blow. The fundamental nature of the mountain does not change. So, too, can we take our seats, embodying the relative stillness in our bones, connecting ourselves to the earth's energy such that we, too, are not blown about by the ever changing worldly winds around us. And this takes some practice, yeah. I find it helpful to drop into an image of the skeleton, the skull, the jawbone, the vertebrae, clavicle, shoulder blades, rib cage, pelvic bowl, the long bones of the arms and the legs, the little bones in the hands and the feet. Can we rest in this skeletal form made of the same stuff as the earth and rest, letting ourselves hang in the bones? Allowing ourselves to feel, again, connected to the earth so it's not through effort or will, but more relaxing into the familiarity of, oh, yeah. These bones of ours, this connection, this earth element within us resting upon the earth element below us. That's all. That's the invitation. Can you rest into the bones? And we know the mind will do what it does with stories and comments and judgments and comparisons and list makings and travel planning. Okay, that's what the mind does. Okay. And at varying points, we catch when we're lost in thought, lost in a plan, lost in a conversation, and then come back. Oh, yeah, we feel this earth element. Are your hands holding each other, bone to bone? Hand resting on the leg, bone to bone. So in the sit, really the invitation is just, can you allow yourself to relax into that which is here, this relative stillness of the bones, resting, the relative stillness of the earth element, the ground beneath us, the hillsides, the mountains, the trees, the rocks. We are a part of the natural world. We are not separate. This is us. And we take our seat again in the family of things. This fathom long form and its earth elements resting upon the earth that is below and around us. And please remember, there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, and we see how it is in this moment, the next moment. Meeting ourselves with as much gentle compassion, curiosity as possible. How is it to rest in the bones? Hand bones on the leg bone, on the thigh bone, hand bones holding each other. The image perhaps of resting in the pelvic bowl. So have fun. With whatever comes. Thanks so much. So lovely to sit with you all, as always. And yeah. So last week, it's funny to see Heidi joining us. And last week, I joined Heidi on a wilderness retreat, which I had spoken about before I left, and it was 5 6 days through the Green River. We started in Utah, drove to Colorado, and then floated about 44 miles. And today, wanting to play with one, it's a couple of things like I worked with on the trip, and the river was, I think, about 9 times higher than it normally is because they had let some water out of the dam upriver to support endangered fish, which had a sweet feel to it. But the guides were so delighted by the astonishing fast and high water. They would be like, look, you know, back there would have been a 15-foot rock that was now underwater. And listening to the guides and how they would read the water and what they would see in the different phrases like boogie water and the eddies and what the water was doing and what that meant to them in terms of how they would read the water. My brother joined me and he's a pilot. And so he would say the same way in which there are the eddies and the visible language of the river. He was like, that happens in air too, in the air element, that there are the different swirls and all the different ways in which the currents move through the air. And that as a pilot, he can feel into it and was so struck by this way in which we read the world, that these guides and those who make their profession reading the river and what they see, or pilots reading the air, whether it's literal or through the different instruments, and considering all the different ways in which we move in the world and how we read the world, how that which we read is the filters that we have through our own conditioning, where and when and in what circumstances we grow up in, what our skin color is, what our sexual orientation is, all influence how we read the world. I grew up in an incredibly violent home. So how I would read the world for, am I safe? What's going to happen? And sort of viewing it that way. And it's taken a fair amount of therapy to change that lens. But really being able through this practice of insight to really work with what are the filters through which I read the world, I see the world. And what of those filters serve me? And what of those filters just obscure what's actually here? And in this deep practice of insight, which we come together to do all the time, it's being able to steady our awareness to be able to look at what's actually happening here, what's actually true. And it takes some doing, right? It's our the thinking mind can be so seductive and persuasive and habitual and sometimes so monotonous, but still we think the same thoughts. Right. And we can, with a way, depending again on how we read things or what the story is, what narrative we're living in, how the narrative of our lives, who we are, who the people in our lives are, how we might look then for evidence to support that narrative. Oh, I'm a fuck up here. Excuse my language. Let me look at all the different ways, the evidence that can support that. Right. Or what I don't like about this person. Let me look about all the evidence that supports that person. It's just a filter, right? It's how we're reading people, how we're reading the world and ourselves. And how can we lean into this practice to check out what's actually true? Tara Brach's great line of real but not true. The thoughts we're thinking or the feelings that we're feeling can feel like, no, this is true. Really? Yeah. Byron Katie's wonderful inquiry of, is it true? Is it true? How do you know? What if it isn't? And the Dalai Lama, I'm thinking it's in the Book of Joy, he talks about this same practice, which I'm guessing is where Byron Katie maybe got it, of really being able to watch the thinking mind and being able to question, is this true? Is this trustworthy? The mind is incredibly untrustworthy. Ajahn Sucitto has a line of like, the mind can be utterly shameless, right? And again, as I said earlier at some point in the instructions, being able to, that we can observe the thinking mind. It's so incredible. And thereby it's such a doorway into freedom because we can make choices or we can evaluate. We can be like, is the thought that I've been thinking, the story I have about my mother, my father, my ex-husband, my daughter, my friends, my life. Is this serving me? Is this narrative that I have, is this way of reading the world, interfacing with the world, leading me to a place of ease and contentment and harmony? Or is it stressing me out and constricting me? Which is not to say we don't perceive, we hold on to discernment. This isn't be like, oh, everything is great. It's not that at all. It's being able to see through the filters of what keeps us from actually being fully present in our lives. Of course, in the poem, this is Mary Oliver's praying. It doesn't have to be the blue iris. It could be weeds in a vacant lot or a few small stones. Just pay attention, then patch a few words together and don't try to make them elaborate. This isn't a contest, but a doorway into thanks and a silence into which any other voice may speak. Right? Don't try to make it a contest, but a doorway in her invitation to allow our paying attention, our awareness to be a doorway into a world that is alive, that we can bring a beginner's mind to the world as opposed to, oh yeah, I know this because I have a 600-page novel, which tells me this is how this world is. Can we allow ourselves to walk through that doorway into a place of freedom to say, oh, what's here? What's actually here? From William Stafford, listening. My father could hear a little animal step or a moth in the dark against the screen, and every sound called the listening out into places where the rest of us had never been. More spoke to him from the soft, wild night than came to our porch for us on the wind. We would watch him look up and his face go keen till the walls of the world flared, widened. My father heard so much that when we stand still, inviting the quiet by turning the face, waiting for a time when something in the night will touch us too from that other place is accessible only if we steady the mind enough, incline the mind to listen. Can we read the world through sound? Can we allow ourselves, give ourselves permission to read the world through different sense doors as opposed to the mind? That tells us, oh yeah, I know this. This is what this person's going to say. This is what this person's going to act. This is how I am. Okay, that's one sense door. Can we give ourselves permission to keep walking through the other sense doors, sound, taste, touch? And what is helpful, and why I started with inviting us to kind of be in our bodies, in the earth element, as a way of landing in the body as a refuge from the mind that can just keep us spinning, right? Thinking this or trying to figure this out or perseverating about or replaying this, all the way, the machinations of the mind. Ooh, it's exhausting, compelling, hard to stop. And we throw in that other layer of our emotions and what's happening in the world. And there's so much that we can be responding, reacting to. We get caught up, spun out. Okay. How do we come back into the body in this breath, these bones? Okay. As a steadying place to be able to be like that mountain, the body steady like the mountain, unperturbed by the blowing winds, the winds of blame and shame and pain and loss and gain. Yeah, it's hard to be human. It's very hard to be human in June of 2022. And this incredible uncertainty we seem to be teetering on of, oh, what's happening? And the stories that we can read of just impending disaster when we just want to hide under the bed. Okay, that's a response. That's a reaction. Can we come back to the body? What's true? What's here now? In the service of allowing us to galvanize our energies, our heart, to be able to move from a place of a wise response to whatever's here, whether it's our own internal suffering, our own heartaches, those that we love, or out in the world. And again, it's not so much a call for activism, but just a way of allowing ourselves to stay open enough to pay attention. Most importantly, perhaps, to pay attention to what obscures the way we see the world. And what do we read? You know, Thich Nhat Hanh, when he speaks about the precepts and talks about being careful what we ingest, not taking in toxins, but in the form of what we listen to, the news, the media, conversations, you know, being able to pay attention enough to what am I actually consuming? Is it serving me? How is it informing how I interface with the world, how I see the world, how I read the world? This is another, I've shared this film before, but I love it. So it's David Wagner's The Silence of the Stars. And there was one night in particular on the retreat that I stayed up pretty late. And where we were in a valley. And what was amazing is these canyon walls. So to be practicing with this earth element as we're moving through these canyons was astonishing, to feel the being such a way of being held by these canyon walls that were so old. And one night stayed up and watched the stars come up over the canyon wall, and just hung out there with the stars for a good number of hours and thought of this poem, Silence of the Stars. When Lawrence Vandelpost one night in the Kalahari Desert told the Bushmen he couldn't hear the stars singing, they didn't believe him. They looked at him half smiling. They examined his face to see whether he was joking or deceiving them. Then those two small men who plant nothing, who have almost nothing to hunt, who live almost on nothing and with no one but themselves, led him away from the crackling thorn scrub fire and stood with him under the night sky and listened. And one of them whispered, "Do you not hear them now?" And Vanderpoel listened, not wanting to disbelieve, but had to answer, "No." They walked him slowly like a sick man to the small dim circle of firelight and told him they were terribly sorry. And he felt even sorrier for himself, and he blamed his ancestors for their strange loss of hearing, which was now his loss. On some clear night when nearby houses have turned off their visions, then the traffic dwindles when through streets are between sirens and jets overhead are between crossings. When the wind is hanging fire in the fir trees and the long-eared owl in the neighboring grove between calls is regarding his own darkness, I look at the stars again as I first did, to school myself in the names of constellations and remember my first sense of their terrible distance. I can still hear what I thought. At the edge of silence, where the inside jokes of my heartbeat, my arterial traffic, the sea above high sea of my inner ear, myself tunelessly humming, but now I know what they are. My fair share of the music of the spheres and clusters of ripening stars, of the song from the throats of the old gods, still tending ever tone-deaf creatures, though through their exiles in the desert. How do we awaken our own tone-deafness to what's around us? There's such a speed of our lives of with financial pressures and all the things we have to do, all the ways we are bombarded by a lot of stimulation that this nervous system is not really wired to interact with, the sense of overwhelm and then the overriding the overwhelm, we get sick. So how in these moments when we can come together and sit together, or when we can find moments of silence, be it walking or just when the body can settle itself, to lean into ways of awakening that within us which has become tone deaf or blind because, again, of these filters, these varying conditions we have of how we view the world. I'll share one more poem from Alison Luderman, Witch Walk. The witch who advertised her services on Facebook walked us around the lake, talking about herbs that heal and what we could gather to eat if big oil failed, if the stores all closed and the lights went out. She wore a lace dress over some kind of tracksuit. Feathers and dried flowers crowned her dreadlocks. She told us she'd had a nervous breakdown, and in the hospital, a schizophrenic friend on the ward confessed that trees spoke to him. They spoke to her too. So maybe they weren't crazy. Maybe the trees were talking. Released, she headed for the wilderness and renamed herself Phoenix, risen from ashes. Now she leads witch walks to show people what's under their feet. Broadleaf and marshmallow, garlic grass, chamomile, mugwort, comfrey, plus at least 900 different kinds of sage. She spoke of its myriad uses, cleanser, hex remover, sanity restorer. And I thought of the 900 different kinds of knowledge there are in this world, most of them invisible. I didn't know what I'd expect, a portal perhaps, to magic me somewhere. But she spoke only of a slight shift in perception, which might allow a tiny purplish wildflower to be a doorway. She wanted us to view heaven as already manifest here on earth, even amid the rubble and desolation of our unraveling. Yes, especially then, she said, if we can sing through these throes, our lives too might become as beautiful as weeds. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. And I love so much about this poem, but this way in which this woman, this guide, the herbalist, reads the world, yeah, reads the plants, reads the 900 kinds of sage. And this invitation to find the doorways, the portals that allow us to connect to the 900 different kinds of wisdom that is mostly invisible. I'm going to first ask each of us to just consider, what are the lenses through which we view the world, how we read the world? And these lenses, they might be multiple. Some, again, more of the obscuring, the restlessness energy, our anxiety, the way we grasp and cling and push away our aversions, our doubt, the self-doubt, these hindrances and the teachings, these obscurations. And just to take a moment or two here, what of those filters, the restlessness, the clinging, the grasping, those of us that are greed types, those of us that are more aversive, pushing things away. Energetically, are we more restless? The mind really busy. The body needing to move. Or it's the paired quality of sloth or torpor. The mind is dull. The body is tired. Fogginess. And then the last of the hindrances to go, that of doubt. What obscuration are you most habituated to? And just to play with this, leaving it as an open-ended question, to notice what colors the filters through which we view the world. Again, the lens of restlessness, of grasping, clinging, aversion, doubt. When we slow down enough to watch the patterns of the mind, we can start to identify, oh, this is doubt. Oh, this is disgreed. This is clinging. This is pushing away. Check it out. I cannot follow this path. I can make choices. I can make choices of how I want to see the world. To consider what other lenses are possible. Yeah. The lenses of the heart. Loving kindness. Joy, compassion, equanimity. The lens of laughter. Delight. Of peace, of friendship, these sort of intermingling these qualities, because I believe they do color how we see the world. How do you want to see the world? How do you want to read the world? If given the choice, How do you want to read the world? Because we are given a choice. Yeah. If we slow down enough and pay attention, that phrase of it's just like this, okay. What choices are possible? And letting the whatever this is a lot, I realize, but the reverberations of how do we want to see the world? The world and its rubble, amid the rubble and desolation of our own unraveling. Okay, that's here. And what else is here? What's beautiful? What touches your heart? What brings you joy? Can we allow that to keep informing us of our worldview? Oh, yeah, this too. But it does take some doing, right? And we can extend this generosity to ourselves to say, oh, wait, let me slow down. To take a breath or two, to check in, how am I seeing the world? What filters are here? Those that are unconsciously present, those that we call in, those that we lean upon from habit. Are they serving us? Might we want different lenses? Offering ourselves, riding on this current of generosity, that it is moment to moment in which we make choices. Check it out in this moment. How am I seeing the world? Through which lenses? Is this serving me? Is it leading me to ease? Is it stressing me out? Allowing ourselves to feel grounded enough in our own wisdom, our own discernment to make these choices in this moment and in the next.
So I'm going to stop here. And thank you so much for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.